It's Thursday, August 10th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show presented by Toyota. It's a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is fresh off vacation, fresh off the golf course, fresh off probably dominating the greens. It's Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah, I don't know if I dominated, but had a great time in Petoskey, Michigan area. Shout out to my buddies, Larry, Dunn, and Steve. We're still golfing in the UP and in Wisconsin as we speak. Had an awesome time. Hit some good shots. Hit a couple of shots that we will not speak of, but recharged and ready to talk fantasy football with my man, Matt Harmon.
Hey, man. Well, your buddies are still out there on the golf course, but it's time for us to get serious, pal. No more golfing for us, you know, because these things are coming up here. The drafts are coming up for people. You and I are talking about our drafts going on right now. And on that note, for all of you out there listening, just a quick little plug here. We published this week on the website the 2023 Fantasy Football Draft Day Blueprint. I wrote the piece, but it's kind of a combination, a big megazord, if you will, of everything the boys have done this offseason. A bunch of pieces in there. Great stuff from Scott that I pointed to. I mean, multiple things from Scott about how he's got my gears turning differently this year. Great pieces from Andy. Great pieces from Dalton. A couple great, awesome pieces from our new writer, Jorge Martin, who was on the show earlier this week about running backs. It kind of goes macro to micro. You're looking at the big picture of stuff for fantasy this year, all the way down to like my guys and the guys you can't leave the draft without, all that sort of stuff. So the big wigs here at Yahoo want me to tell you, you are not allowed to draft. You're not allowed to get on the clock until you read this piece. So please go check it out on the website. Again, great stuff from everybody here on the Yahoo fantasy team. But with that, Scott, we don't have any news to talk about here before we dive into our tight end positional preview episode. How lucky for you, buddy. Right off vacation, you get to talk about tight ends. But I do want to just ask you real quick. It's preseason or training camp depth chart week here. A lot of them got dropped yesterday afternoon. And, I mean, Scott, preseason depth charts, that is when you know, like, fantasy football season is back. The overreaction to preseason depth charts. I wanted to think of just if you had seen any funny ones. I brought a couple funny ones to the table. I mean, it's always like an eye rolling exercise.
For sure. And some of those depth charts could be done by the intern. They could be done by somebody. Teams don't take them seriously. They're certainly not binding. And we know that and the depth chart to me, it goes hand in hand with what the coaches and what the players say at the podium, the sound bites. Anything that's explained in a soundbite by what else is he going to say, just throw it out the window. And I know everybody's in the best shape of their life and everybody's going to make the Pro Bowl and make an MVP run and you know, win the rushing title and all that stuff. And I always say common sense is like your best fantasy skill. And you can even just take that a half step further and say having a good BS detector is a great fantasy skill to have. And that's kind of what I'm thinking about when I hear about, I don't seek out these depth charts. They just find you on social media. And they become things that are talked about. I haven't found any depth chart notation that I've actually seen as an actionable event.
Speaking of up on the podium, I did think it was hilarious. You talk about like the coaches don't care about these. Sometimes it's an intern doing it. I thought it was hilarious that literally Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel, when asked about the Dolphins preseason depth chart, his exact quote was, "Preseason depth charts are like my nemesis. I just make sure that they have every player on the team. Like I go through and like, oh, yep, that's everybody. Good stuff." Three funny ones, though, Scott, I did get a laugh at when I saw them on social media. Number one, Zamir White listed as the running back one for the Las Vegas Raiders. I mean, obviously, Josh Jacobs is not in camp, but if there's any head coach, Scott, I could see going down to that intern and be like, hey, Jack, do me a favor. Let's stick to Josh Jacobs a little bit and let's make Zamir White the running back one. Another funny one, the Bucks listed Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask as the starting quarterback. And the funny part about this wasn't that. It was that everybody, including like big wig reporters like Adam Schefter, like, I've never seen anything like this. Dude, yes, you have. Teams do this with quarterbacks all the time. They do this guy or this guy. The Jaguars, I mean, you know, maybe this isn't the best example. The Jaguars and Urban Meyer's season did that with like almost the entire depth chart, which is a very college football thing to do. But easy, Scott, got to be the gold medal winner for most hilarious preseason depth chart, the Falcons running backs. And it wasn't even just the order in which they had these guys. It literally said starter, Cordarrelle Patterson, backup, Tyler Allgeier, reserve, Bijan Robinson. I mean, Arthur Smith, man, you got to, I mean, ever since he's been there, he's always done this with rookies. Like Drake London was the wide receiver 5. But you got to hand it the just a great troll job putting the guy you take eighth overall as the reserve running back.
Yeah, troll job is the phrase for the ones you listed. I mean, Josh McDaniels, I just came off a golf course where my rule of thumb is anybody wearing a visor is probably an asshat. And I just pictured McDaniels, visor on the golf course, you know, saying, okay, we're trolling Josh Jacobs. Samir White's my guy. He's my bell cow. And the case of Arthur Smith in that Falcons depth chart, this is like Pete Carroll. You mentioned it's kind of like a college thing. I think of Pete Carroll, right? Competition is going to be the strongest thing about this team. Every position's up for grabs. Nobody's handed anything. And they're just saying, okay, Bijan Robinson, yeah, you're the hot shot. You got to earn your stripes. You're the running back three right now. We all know that on opening day, he's going to have 20 touches, and the Falcons are going to run the ball into the ground. To the point, we'll talk later, what does that mean for Kyle Pitts? Because it was such a run-heavy team last year. It probably will be again. But you would never invest that much draft capital in Bijan Robinson and not start him unless something went horribly wrong this summer, and we haven't heard anything similar to that. So you take this all stuff. It's with a grain of salt. It's something to laugh about. Again, when it becomes an actionable event, we'll let you know. But I haven't seen anything that comes close to that.
I mean, number one, you're killing me with the visor thing. I've never been a visor guy, especially now at this point. Like, you know, because I don't have any hair anymore. It would be really counterintuitive to wear the visor. But I mean, that's great. But yeah, meanwhile, it's so funny. The Falcons social media team can't stop posting clips of Bijan Robinson, you know, obliterating linebackers with like triple and double moves in single man coverage. Yet the preseason depth chart, yeah, we're going to put that guy as a reserve. So it is this rather hilarious stuff.
Coming, you know, one game. Thing about Mayfield and Trask, I just wish we could import 2019 Jameis Winston back to the Bucks when he threw the, what, 36 touchdowns, I think it was, and 30 interceptions. That's what this team needs, right? I mean, last year, Brady threw well over 700 passes. I think they might have set an NFL record for pass attempts. This year, they're going to try to hide their quarterback, whoever it is, and it's going to torpedo Mike Evans. It's going to torpedo Chris Godwin. They need a hair on fire quarterback. They need Ryan Fitzpatrick back on this team. They need Jameis Winston back on this team. Somebody like that who's just going to play YOLO ball. I'm not using the acronym I want to use, but just, you know, YOLO ball, throw it up. If my guy catches it, fine. The other team runs it back for a pick six. Hey, we're on offense again. That's what Tampa Bay needs. They don't need Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask. They need somebody who's going to just play to the excitement and just throw the ball to your guy, throw the ball to the other guy, who cares? Let's just see 70 points go up on the board.
The worst part about that is that, like, Baker Mayfield thinks and plays like he is that guy, but he's not that guy, which is why, you know, when I've heard Dalton make this case, a couple, like, my buddy James Coe has made this case to me. He's like, it's Mike Evans. How can you have him this? It's like, well, did you remember who wrecked DJ Moore's season last year? Do you remember who that was early in the year?
Yeah,
it was B. Mayfield. So I think, Scott, we're on the same page. If we had control of the Bucs preseason depth chart, we would just put an N in front of that or. I would prefer Baker Mayfield nor Kyle Trask, and let's get anything else going here. But I guess we have to hope Kyle Trask is functional.
I think Evans and Godwin at current ADP are undraftable. I'm not even remotely considering them.
I hate to say it because I love both those players, but I have never once been tempted to click either Chris Godwin or
Evans is going to the Hall of Fame. Evans is going, yeah. And Chris Godwin is a heck of a player. He has been the moment he left Penn State. And as Andy said when we did one of our mock drafts, I mean, wide receiver gets thin pretty early, so we're looking for some good values where those guys fall. But it's all downside, man. And they're going to lose. And I'm sorry, I got the Demi Moore raspy voice from 1995. Another movie reference that you won't get. But they're going to lose 150 pass attempts from last year. You know, this is going to be a sad offense to watch. I mean, I guess you can talk yourself into Rashad White maybe, but Tampa Bay is going to be no fun this year. And it's interesting because that's such a weak division. They got good outside of division schedule. So I'm kind of talking myself into the Saints and the Falcons because I'm seeing who they're going to play every week. So you think, well, can you talk yourself into the Buccaneers? No, I cannot talk myself into the Buccaneers. I can talk myself out of the Buccaneers. Pretend they don't exist on draft day. If you want White, that's your business. Ignore everybody else.
At ADP, I'd rather try to talk myself into one of the Panthers receivers, and and that's probably the worst receiver core in the league, unless my dude Jonathan Mingo takes like a massive step. So we will see on that one. But that's enough of preseason depth charts. That's certainly enough. certainly enough Tampa Bay quarterback talk. Let's get into it. It's positional preview week here on the show. We are talking the tight end position today. Everybody's got such a sad, nasty taste in their mouth about tight ends last year. We'll try to figure it out here. What we're going to do, we're going to start with a wide angle view at the position, everything you kind of need to know from a high level standpoint about the position here in 2023. We highlight the guys we disagree most on, and then we pick the guys we think can make a leap in 2023, maybe try to save this tight end position. And we wrap it all up by picking, quote, our guys at the position this year. So, Scott, let's start with a wide angle view of the position. Where are the strengths? Where are the weaknesses? And after a really rough year from tight end, I mean, to the point that it was like a let's have an existential crisis. What do we do with tight ends in fantasy? You know, I'm not in on that talk, but some people are. Where do we stand with the position as it comes in here to 2023?
You know, I think a strength of this position, and it's going to sound a little bit odd because Travis Kelce obviously dominates and he's entering an age 34 season. But I think most of the talent this position is in a good age pocket where you can tell yourself a story that they're on, their arrow is pointed up, they're on the escalator, they haven't had their career season yet. I think that's a strength of the position. Also, I like that whenever you feel like taking a tight end, there's usually a tight end who slots around the round that you're thinking about it. So it's there's a spacing to it, a cadence to the tight end position that I like. Now, the obvious weakness is that if you don't get Kelce, and I think the only other player who enters this conversation for me is Mark Andrews. Talk about guys who you could tell yourself a story. They have plausible double-digit upside for touchdowns. Everybody else, it just feels like a reach. It's like, oh, man, I'm taking DJ Hawkinson at ADP. It sounds really rich. He could score 5 touchdowns. George Kittle, he could be 4th on his team in targets. Kyle Pitts, he's submarined by his own offense's infrastructure ecosystem drink. So I what's going to happen is this. If you're going to take an early tight end, one of the vanity tight ends, I think you're going to feel like you're playing a man down at running back or receiver. If you take one of the middle class or the third tier tight ends, you're going to feel like, man, did I get any upside here? But that's okay because there's only one Kelce. There's only one Mark Andrews. And so I'm just looking, my ethos at this position is probably going to be, can I draft a player who can hang with everybody else and be a plausible top 10 guy, maybe a top 5 guy? That's why I'm trying to do a tight end. I'm not trying to win the league at tight end. And I get it. Last year, Kelce was one of the quote unquote league winners, one of the Yahoo MVPs. He showed up on the highest scoring Yahoo teams. That's great. I'm not going to probably play that way as great as Kelce is. I'm just looking to make a par, use a golf analogy. I'm trying to make a par at the tight end position, not make a bogey, hang with everybody else, and I'll win the league by dominating the wide receiver room, get those 3 receivers who start themselves. I'll win the league by being shrewd with my running backs or hitting on the right quarterback. You don't win your league at tight end because there just aren't league winners at this position.
I mean, every conversation we've had about a position this week, it all flows together, obviously, because you're drafting a team here, right? And this is the position where I've struggled exactly like you said, where my biggest thing this season, as I've said, is that I think it all starts at quarterback. Do you want to go for one of those high-end quarterbacks or do you want to wait? Because if you go with one of those high-end quarterbacks, you are sacrificing at the running back and wide receiver position. And I am sometimes willing to make that bargain for the elite quarterback and sacrifice at the running back or wide receiver position. I struggle at times to do that same thing here with tight ends. And that's why I haven't ended up with a lot of Kelce. It's why I haven't ended up with a lot of Mark Andrews, even though I really like the Ravens offense. And it's why I haven't ended up with really any TJ Hawkinson. Like, those are the guys to me, they're the top 3 this year that I've struggled with. And if you just look at consensus ADP, even George Kittle, I love George Kittle, but he's going 44th overall in consensus ADP right now. Those guys are all top 50 picks. They're sort of, I don't want to say full red light players, Scott, but they're guys that I really struggle to draft because I just can't justify sacrificing at the running back, wide receiver, and quarterback position to take one of those players, even if I do like their outlooks this year.
Kittle, to me, symbolizes the biggest gap between real life value and fantasy value. He plays with this joy, the joie de vivre that I love. He's a guy who, if they told him, look, George, you're blocking 60 times a day, he'd be like, great, let's kick some ass. Let's run for 300 yards. He wouldn't care. He could easily be 4th in targets on this team. And last year, a great thing happened. Brock Purdy came out of nowhere, becomes their starter, and George Kittle starts scoring all these distance touchdowns. I think he scored, I want to say, 7 touchdowns with Purdy, and they were 33-yard, 40-yard, you know, these long plays that aren't repeatable for anybody, let alone a tight end. I just can't put those forward and carry those year over year. So there's going to be a lot of Kittle analysis, which is going to be backward looking. And it's like, I don't think that's a repeatable event for him to keep doing that. And again, I want a tight end where Kittle goes. I want a tight end who can dominate his team in targets. So I feel like, okay, this is a guy who's going to lead his team in touchdown catches. I don't know that that's true with Kittle. He's an awesome real life player. He may be on the Hall of Fame trajectory too. And of course, we have Andy Behrens, the Iowa grad, who's always going to tell you that T.J. Hockenson and George Kittle are basically just as good as Kelce and Gronkowski and Tony Gonzalez and all that, because, you know, go Iowa, go Caitlin Clark. But I think George Kittle's a trap. I'm avoiding him this year. And I hate it. I hate saying that. He's one of my, not only is he one of my five favorite players in the NFL, he might be number one. And I'm probably not going to draft him at his current ADP at all.
Sounds like you're pretty out on T.J. Hockenson at right in that same range too. I agree with you that Kittle, for me, I share basically all of your same sentiments there. And, you know, maybe we're wrong about this and, you know, people can throw it back in our face, but like, I don't even have him in the same tier as guys like Andrews and Hockenson, even though, again, in ADP, he's 44th to 42nd for T.J. Hockenson. And let me just talk about Mark Andrews real quick, because I don't want to say I'm out on Mark Andrews. And again, I really don't want to say I'm out on these guys. They just, you know, structurally, I haven't been drafting many of them. Can I make the case, though, that I think Mark Andrews at 27th overall, he's kind of sandwiched right in the middle between T.J. Hockenson and Travis Kelce from an overall standpoint, which is fine. I mean, Kelce in consensus ADP is the fifth overall player. That's pretty wild. But I just struggle a little bit with Andrews because I know that he has always been Lamar Jackson's guy. And like, if anybody's going to benefit from this offense taking another step, it should be Mark Andrews. But if, and I know, Scott, it's a big if, these three receivers are all on the field together. I mean, shoot, Bateman ain't even been on the field so far. But like, if they're all three on the field at the same time, even if the team is passing more, does Mark Andrews not stand to lose a little bit if all of these guys stand to gain a little?
It's really simple with Mark Andrews. Your stance on Mark Andrews comes down to how you feel about the receivers here. Do you think Odell Beckham has one more salad season left? Do you think Bateman is finally going to take the leap? And one reason why Andrews is actually a target for me is a couple of things. One, his ADP, it's possible to get him a full round after his ADP. You may get him to slide a little bit. You may just be in a room that's a little bit tight end agnostic. And so, and it's easy to say, well, just take the guys who slide. But that's actually a really good strategy, to take the guys who slide. That's been proven to be one of the soundest strategies. One of the football guys, writers, I wish I could think of the name right now, made that point recently. I thought it was a great point. A great idea when you think, I wish I had thought of that myself or verbalized that myself.
Sounds like an Adam Harstad thing.
That's who it was. Thank you. I'm so glad. I knew you'd come up with it. Adam Harstad.
He's actually, and that's just one thing. I was going back and forth with somebody this morning, like a user saying like, you do all this work. And I think this is a fair point. I enjoyed the conversation. It was like, you know, you do all this work with wide receivers, but like the top of your receiver rankings are the same as everybody else's. It's like, and I kind of want, I don't know if I did, but I wanted to bring up the point from Adam that like ADP actually is pretty good at like predicting who's going to be good. That's why you kind of have to rank within ADP and then move guys around based on your stand on players. So I think it's just a great point that like, if people start to slide a little bit and away from the consensus view, sometimes it makes sense to jump on that. And Andrews is a good guy to bring up with that.
I'm so glad you mentioned Adam's name, because I wanted to give him the credit for what I was referring to. And he's just an interesting guy in the fantasy space and somebody who's unique. His takes are just different than everybody else's. And there was so much, again, there was a kind of a eureka aha moment when I was reading it. And I'm glad you mentioned ADP. It's so trendy to be the hipster, you know, to put your hat on sideways and say, oh, I don't care about ADP. I take the guys I want. I got the right answers and stuff. You have to know what the market says. I mean, if you went into a car dealership, you'd have a rough idea of how much the car that you wanted cost. You just wouldn't think, okay, well, I got a checkbook here. I'm writing a check. Tell me how much you want me to put on. You know, you don't work. That's not how the world works. What something costs matters. That's what ADP is. Market behavior matters. I actually think being able to manipulate or leverage the market is maybe more important than understanding anything about player takes or usage or stuff like that preseason. Now, the usage stuff will come into play during the season. And it's obviously, everything's important. I don't want to discount anything. But
yeah,
if you can leverage the market, if you can know what your opponents are getting wrong or know what inefficiencies are available in the market. We saw this in baseball, right? The whole movie Moneyball is about the Oakland A's saying, okay, on-base percentage is mispriced in the market. Let's pound on base percentage because we don't have to pay for it what it probably should cost. That's what the Oakland A's did to be successful when they had a payroll that was out of whack with all these other teams. If you can do that for fantasy, that's going to make you a winning player.
I love that. I mean, that all that high level stuff is really good as we're approaching this position specifically because of how it slides in the rest of drafts. Now, I'll also make the case, Scott, that I think my joke campaign slogan this entire offseason about, like, hey, we got to get rid of tight ends. You should merge tight ends with wide receivers. We just need to restore the middle class of the position, like you said. And I would argue that people have an unfair, bad taste in their mouth about that middle class of tight ends because all of these dudes basically got hurt last year at different times, right? Like, if you look back, I'm just looking at my top 10 ranked tight ends from last year, right before drafts. Kelce, obviously, great. We know he was awesome. We know he was the man. We love to see it. Mark Andrews, he even dealt with injuries at time last year. And then when he got healthy, like, his quarterback was not a part of the equation anymore. Kyle Pitts, obviously his season wasn't off to a great start, but he also ended up on IR. Who's to say that he wouldn't have found himself in the back half of the year with Desmond Ridder, sort of like Drake London did. Darren Waller, obviously injuries in Las Vegas. George Kittle, you know, he was good to end the season, but he did deal with some injuries. Dalton Schultz was kind of like the metronome of the position. He pretty much stayed healthy. Dallas Goedert, he was awesome, but he even dealt with injuries. Dawson Knox, I mean, you don't have to tell me about Dawson Knox. That was a bit of a disaster. TJ Hockenson was good, although we think that some of that production was a little overinflated. So my point here is just, if some of these guys had stayed healthy, I'm not sure we're having this really gross kind of like crisis about tight ends like we kind of are right now.
Well, let me ask you this. Everybody knows that with running backs, you're just drafting the constant fear that they're going to get hurt because it's such a high attrition position. To what extent is that true for tight ends in general? I mean, for one thing, they're doing dirty work. And that's what we're always looking for, guys in the slot, right? We're always looking for guys who don't have their hand in the ground, who aren't blocking. But how much is just tight end just an attrition position where we have to expect some of what happened last year, some of that wreckage to be part and parcel with every season?
That actually is a really good question and something I hadn't really considered. Kittle was on this podcast a couple months ago. I'm sure he would love to hear us talking about him in fantasy like this. No, but I think he gets it a little bit. But talking about how much is on these guys' plate from a snap-to-snap perspective, from a mental perspective, from a physicality perspective. And I do wonder, is this going to be a situation where especially the guys who are going to be on teams asking them to block a lot. And, you know, I could go back on my list and think about, I mean, Kyle Pitts certainly isn't asked to be involved in the run game because they run the ball a lot. Dallas Goedert asked to be involved in the run game. Mark Andrews asked to be involved in the run game because they run the ball a lot. I wonder if that part of it, and I don't know what plays these guys got hurt when they were run plays, but just the collisions and the attrition sort of piling up on these guys, maybe that is something to keep our minds on. Let's talk top 12 guys, the position. And there's really a chunk of dudes I want to focus on here. Number one, Travis Kelce, of course. Number two, Mark Andrews, Baltimore Ravens. TJ Hockenson, Minnesota Vikings. George Kittle, San Francisco 49ers. Darren Waller, New York Giants at number five. Kyle Pitts at six. Dallas Goedert, Evan Ingram, Pat Freiermuth, David Njoku, Dalton Schultz, Greg Dulcich. Scott, I want to ask you about this 6-7-8 range here. Kyle Pitts, Dallas Goedert, Evan Ingram. Any hesitation with any of these guys? And I guess specifically Kyle Pitts. Every fantasy writer seems to hate Kyle Pitts. I think Kyle Pitts is a really good player, and I really like the Falcons' offense. So what's your temperature on getting back on board with Kyle Pitts, who was going really high, you know, as like the tight end three last year? Now you don't really have to pay that price for him. He's the 61st overall player off the board.
It's going to be an offense. Even if Desmond Ridder is a step up over the Mariota show or the last legs of Matt Ryan, it's still going to be a top five run team. They're going to pound the ball. I think their defense is actually going to be better too. I think they could win a lot of boring games, a lot of games that you're watching that eight box and the Falcons game ended 20 minutes earlier than every other game. And also Kyle Pitts, maybe he's not going to lead that team in targets, and you really need the volume with him because they haven't been able to unlock him as a touchdown guy. The player in this junk, in this little pocket that I want is Dallas Goedert, who the last 2 years, 10.6 yards per target, and they've had 123.1 rating when they've targeted Goedert, which is just through the roof. The touchdowns haven't been great, but he's getting better. Jalen Hurts has taken significant strides his last two seasons. And even though they have two really talented receivers, it's still a narrow tree. They don't throw to a third receiver. They don't throw to their backs a ton. Now, Hurts obviously will run a fair amount. But I think Goedert, I said in the Fearless Forecast video, that I think he's going to beat his ADP. Maybe he doesn't smash it, but I think you're actually going to get he's going to be a top three, top four tight end, and he's not drafted as such. So when I'm looking at these three players, the guy I'd be circling and targeting would be Dallas Goedert.
I like that. I have Evan Ingram like kind of a next tier down, and I think about like Dallas Goedert as kind of a boring pick in a weird way, but not only does he have that safe target share alongside those receivers, They also have like specific plays for him. You know, those tight end screens that they do, which are just great man coverage beaters. And Dallas Goedert is like, that's why those yards per target are so high, because he just murks dudes on those plays specifically. So he's a guy that's not like an exciting click, I guess, at this position, but feels very safe, and a guy that I kind of feel like, yeah, he should be like the tight end five off the board. And that feels really good for me.
It's funny to say he's not exciting, because when you watch him, he's very exciting.
He's exciting, yeah.
But what's not exciting is that he hasn't had a ton of volume and he hasn't had a ton of touchdowns. And one thing that was hard for me to kind of forget I saw was 2 years ago, his best game of the 2021 season was when Gardner Minshew started. And it just made me wonder, well, just maybe him and Hurts just aren't on the same page yet. But that's going to happen. Hurts has gotten so much better. Hurts went from, is he even an NFL starter? Is he kind of a gimmicky player? To now last year he could have won the MVP and they came within one or two plays of winning the Super Bowl. And I still think 1-53, it might be their best roster in the NFL. So I know there's been this quote unquote Super Bowl curse, the team that just lost the Super Bowl, which I think is a lot of gobbledygook. I think the Eagles already have 12 wins in the bank, and I can't wait to watch this team. And it's just, you have to come away from your draft portfolio with some Eagles, man. You're not going to want to sit this out. Fortunately, there's a lot of ways to get invested in this team. Philadelphia's going to the moon, man. You want to be on this ship. And again, Goddard's efficiency is so good. All you have to tell yourself a story is if his opportunity just goes up the slightest bit, he can easily beat his ADP. I don't think he can smash it. I don't think Dallas Goedert has like tight end one, tight end two upside, but I think there's an excellent chance that you'll get your investment back plus a little bit of profit.
Yeah, I think there is a little bit of profit there, which is key at this position. And we'll
again,
talk about
I talked about this being a position you're trying to make a par. And, yeah. And look, and I get it. Somebody's going to say, well, I had Kittle the season he broke out. I had Andrews the season he broke out. And by the way, the year Kittle broke out, I will say with pride that on the Breakfast Table, a podcast I used to be on with Michael Salfino, we were pounding the table saying George Kittle is like a screaming giveaway. And people were like, oh, his snap share is not that high. It's like, well, he's so good, his snap share is going to go through the roof. They can't keep this guy off the field. And Andrews, yeah, Andrews was a receiver in college, right? I mean, one of those Oklahoma guys. And that's what I want you to focus on, by the way, dear listener, both preseason and during the season, is the key to tight end is getting guys who don't play tight end. You want guys who are in the slot. You want guys who are running routes. And that's what you're focusing on. Okay. I want you to, when you're looking for pickups and think, okay, how not snaps can be misleading, because if you're on the field and you're blocking, you can never catch a pass when you block. That's the way the NFL works. You want your tight end in the slot. You want your tight end running routes. So focus on, and obviously you want the opportunity at the goal line. That's important too. So that's what you're focusing on. And not surprisingly, Kelsey and Andrews, I think, were 1-2 in slot reps last year. And let's just really briefly talk about Kelsey, because he's a guy, I hate taking him in the first round in the age 34 season, right? But then you look, well, Patrick Mahomes is going to get there somehow. He's going to get his 4,500 and 40 touchdowns somehow. And if you can't tell yourself a story that you love any of the Kansas City receivers, see, that's where I am with the Ravens. Every time I hear a Ravens note about Bateman or Beckham, it seems like it's a negative note. Zay Flowers is a rookie. I don't know if I should expect miracles right away. So part of my enthusiasm for Andrews is just inflated because I'm not on board with the wide receiver room. And I think there's going to be a lot of divergency there. I know you and I don't agree on that. And I feel uncomfortable disagreeing with the wide receiver guru on that, but that is what it is. I think everybody can look at the Kansas City wide receiver room and be scared of it. And so maybe Travis Kelce is going to justify going fifth or sixth or seventh some drafts. That's never going to be me, but I'm afraid it might beat me.
I am, in the way that I'm optimistic about the Ravens, I think that I agree with your point, though, about the Kansas City Chiefs. I like Sky Moore. I'm drafting a lot of Sky Moore, but I'm expecting Sky Moore to go as like the 50th receiver off the board and maybe be the 24th receiver in fantasy. And then I don't think, MVS is going to play. He's going to play the most snaps probably at the position, him and Sky Moore. And he's just not a target earner. He's not a guy that's going to get fed a bunch of volume. And
MVS is a fantasy disruptor. He plays enough to take stuff off the table but he'll never produce enough to be fantasy playable. He just gets in the way of other guys. We want to get the stats.
In a way though, he has this role that like every now again, if you're really desperate, you'd be like, well, MVS runs the most routes on the team. It's Patrick Holmes. And like, if he catches one, it's going to be for 50 yards. So that like adds to the fantasy irritation that you're talking about.
He could be a DFS punt play if you have studs everywhere else. You're like, okay, if this is the week MVS catches a 67 yard touchdown, I'm gonna win my DFS contest. Maybe that you can tell yourself that story. But he won't have, not only will he not have enough boom games to be a seasonal weekly guy, but they'll be so hard to project.
But I think we're on the same page with Kelsey, where we have enough skepticism with these other receivers like Justin Watson and Rashee Rice. And I mean, Justin Ross, if he makes the roster, that's a win. I don't think those guys are commanding enough targets. And I saw no sign of decline from Kelsey last year. So that's why it does make him an interesting guy to talk about. But you mentioned, Scott, like playing from the slot. I think that's a perfect transition to these rookies this year. And I think this is a big conversation at the position, because typically we don't care about these guys in fantasy, right? Again, to mention the conversation with George Kittle from a few months ago about why it's hard for these rookies to transition to the NFL. But I see three rookies this year that are just going to moonwalk into being day one starters with their offense. One is Dalton Kincaid with the Bills, who we've all kind of theorized, and the Bills have sort of said, like, is basically just going to be their big slot receiver. Andy's new favorite player, Iowa tight end Sam Laporta with the Detroit Lions, and quietly Luke Musgrave with the Green Bay Packers. You know, we think usually, oh, these rookie tight ends are going to be blocked by some veteran blocking tight end. Well, Luke Musgrave's competition to start at tight end is another rookie that was drafted later in Tucker Kraft. Based on our rankings, I'm kind of buying into these rookie tight ends. And I think, Scott, you're a little more conservative. So let's try to find the balance here. And I'm not saying I'm all in on all these rookies, but what do we do with these guys? Are we betting on outliers a little too hard, or do any of the three really stand out as a good bet this year?
I mean, if you never bet on rookie tight ends or outlier tight ends as young players, you'd be so far ahead of the game. You'd just be swimming in money. The problem with Kincaid is just the Bills already have a lot of good players. And I can see my dog's really excited about this. So hello, Abby Bean. Thank you for showing up on the podcast. Diggs is there. Davis is there. I know nobody thinks that their other tight end. Why can't I think of his name?
Dawson Knox.
Dawson Knox. I mean, Knox is still there to fantasy disrupt. Not that he's going to be great, but he's going to get his 520 yards and five or six touchdowns. So it's just, and you know, Josh Allen will run for some touchdowns. It just, how many pieces can you cut up that pie? Of the three guys you mentioned, if I was going to draft any of them, it would be Sam Laporta, because I think there's a screaming opportunity here. St. Brown's terrific, and I will draft him proactively. I will certainly try to be overweight on him when this draft season is over, but they're not going to have Jameson Williams for a while. And they haven't, obviously Hockenson was left last year. They still kind of threw to their tight ends, but it was a platoon approach after Hockenson left. I think Laporta has a sneaky 6-15-6 season in him, maybe, but if that does it for you. And none of these guys are going to be home runs. Just Kincaid won't get on the field enough. And there's just too many guys in front of him in the pecking order. And what's going to happen when Kincaid pops is people are going to start taking their victory laps. Oh, that's why I loved him in Dynasty. That's why he's a buy in Dynasty. That's one of my least favorite ways of hacking, saying, oh, you can't play him in seasonal. You can't pick him up, but he'll be good in 2 years, you know, and I'll be right then. And I'll victory lap then. Kincaid's a monster. It's just, it can't happen right now because there's too many people ahead of him.
I think you can get him to like 80 targets, but that might be a stretch. And the concern for me, and I have Kincaid at tight end 12, which is basically like you can take him as like the last person to be a tight end, like drafter. Go ahead and draft him, because I think at that late, I'm not necessarily trying to hit par. I am trying to hit that hole in one. I am trying to hit an upside bet there, because I'll just move on to the next guy at that point.
Sure.
But with Kincaid, I think the concern, and I think I've expressed this on the show before, is that they're going to get into the season and it's like, okay, the tight end as the slot receiver sounds much better in June, July, and August than it does in September, October, and November. And if like this dude can't block and he's not the separator that they think he is against NFL like slot corners, and the size doesn't, you know, there are downsides here from like a, I think Kincaid can be good for the Bills and can do what they want him to do, but like how often he's doing it is the question for fantasy. And I think that's the risk of the whole tight end as the slot receiver idea.
You know, we talk about the rookie receivers sometimes where the idea is like get in on them in the middle of the year, let them get their feet wet a little bit and let them learn something about the NFL. And maybe they're ready to produce in the second half of the year. I could see that being the Dalton Kincaid story, where he's drafted in fantasy leagues. He's useless to his manager. Bye weeks kick in, injuries kick in, he's dropped. And somebody happily scoops him up and maybe gets a productive player in the second half of the year. That's how I want you to play Dalton Kincaid. I want you to pounce, or maybe not pounce, but be open-minded to him in the middle of the year when he's been given up for dead, when he's still just a kid learning about the NFL. And maybe in the second half of the year, he'll be productive for us.
I love that. And that's kind of what I'm saying here by tight end 12 is like,
sure,
you can draft him. And if it just doesn't work out, whatever, move on to the next guy. But like, take the shot in case that's not true. But yeah, the reality is if he's going to pop, I mean, look, the Bills are talking about him. No, this is not a tight end. This is basically a receiver. So in fantasy, why don't we treat him like a receiver where you want that guy in the back half of the year? Exactly like you said. I think that is like definitely how I'm going to approach Dalton Kincaid now at this point. Scott, let's move into the players that we disagree. Actually, before we do that, just on Luke Musgrave real quick, and probably only a best ball guy just because we didn't mention him, but he is going to start at tight end for the Packers. So just keep that in mind with Luke Musgrave, a guy that he might fit into this back half of the season type thing if Jordan Love is actually any good, which we don't know. All right, let's move into biggest player disagreements. And let's start with Darren Waller. He's going off the board as a tight end 7. You have him at 10. I have him at tight end 4. I kind of explained my case for Darren Waller with Scott Barrett last week, and we talked about him as an upside player. He is someone, Scott, that I think there is downside risk. There is absolutely downside risk. But I also think if this offense passes more than they did last year because they have more faith in Daniel Jones in year two and they have more faith in these receivers and they have faith in Waller and they kind of start calling plays like Mike Kafka and Brian Daboll have done in other spots. I know Kafka is a first-time play caller, but regardless, they start playing more like that. I think there is potential for Waller to not just give you par, but also hit you a home run, mixing sport metaphors there. So why are you kind of like on Waller, where I seem to be like, if he's a guy that in the 62nd overall pick where he goes right now, if he's there, I am passing receiver and I'm clicking him.
Man, age 31 season. He's been hurt most of the last 2 years, team change. I know they did some great things. Dable did some great things with Daniel Jones, but it's not like we know Daniel Jones is some kind of kingmaker. This is where I'd want to stop betting on Darren Waller. Just the arrow. I think the arrow is pointing downward. Now I get it. You look around the passing game. They need somebody to be a target hog, their receiver room. I'm still waiting for the Giants to find out they've added somebody, but you know, the draft has, I think the draft already happened. I think free agency has come and gone. We don't see a lot of trades at this time of the year, and anybody who's cut in August is going to be just a flyer, you know, to even make somebody else's team. You know, people don't cut impact players unless there's like maybe some kind of rift outside of the player's talent. So I don't know why they didn't improve this receiver room in some way, shape, or form. Unless this, I know they have a couple of young players they're excited about, but I don't see anybody, you know, who's going to make a major impact. So they probably want Waller to be 125 target guy, but I'm just worried about age 31 season coming off 2 injury years and then changing teams. A quarterback I'm still not really sure on. Waller's an easy pass for me.
Yeah, your whole idea of like once the cheese goes bad, like
there you go.
It's bad. And I feel that risk is there with Darren Waller. I think they're kind of taking wide receiver as like a by committee approach. Like Darius Slayton, Jalen Hyatt, they're the speed flanker receivers. Hodgins is their X. You know, maybe those guys can also rotate a little bit, you know, X and flanker. They've got a ton of slot receivers. I feel like they're kind of taking that by a committee approach. And yeah, Waller is going to be the 120 target guy, which is why I want to kind of bet on him as an upside player. But if the cheese is bad, man, it's not getting good again. And I think that is the one concern I do have with Waller. Next guy I want to talk about here, Tyler Higbee. Yo, this is like I'm hoping I par. And it's the most boring way you can approach a tight end position. Honestly, him and Dalton Schultz are not too dissimilar here. Tyler Higbee, I've got a tight end 11. You have him at tight end 4. And again, I think he's like the arbitrage Dalton Schultz, who is the tight end 11, who you're just hoping he catches like 60 passes for 550 yards and a few touchdowns. But I think Tyler Higbee, who goes as the 129th player off the board, is that proposition the same as well. But you maybe not interested as much.
Yeah, when the script was prepared, I had him at tight end 14. I've since moved him up to tight end 12. Okay, just cool. Because I was doing some thinking about Cooper Kupp, and I was saying, trying to get people to not draft Cooper Kupp, saying this Rams offense has lookout below potential. It's just hard to believe they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, but the NFL ages in dog years. But look at the rest of those wide receivers. They need Tyler Higbee to be a major part of this offense. They'll be throwing bubble screens to him. He'll be running tons of routes. I actually think so the point is, I moved him up to 12. I basically have him where you have him now. If you're punting this position, I think he's a pretty good target to get you that boring 67 catches, 667 yards, you know, 5 or 6 touchdowns. If you're happy with that, and that's probably what you're looking for at this pocket, because these guys don't have blow-up potential. If they did, they'd go earlier. And it's going to be the most boring vanilla thing in the world, cheese pizza, no toppings. But I'm okay with Tyler Higbee.
honestly, I think you could take Tyler Higbee and ride out what might be a pretty nice like September into early October. And then if there's that danger, the floor falls out of the Rams offense. Mm. That's when you start thinking about the Kincaids or the Musgraves or these guys like maybe catching on in the back half of the year. Maybe some of these candidates to make the leap we'll talk about here in just a second. Want to hit on David Njoku, who you've got ranked just a little bit higher than me. You've got him at 9. I've got him at 13. I have found myself much more interested to clicking like Elijah Moore or these other guys from the Browns offense. I think Njoku's like kind of sneaky. Even if he's way more exciting, he honestly kind of profiles a little bit as like a Dalton Schultz or like a Tyler Higbee player to me, where he's going to have some volume, but is it difference-making volume? I don't know. I've had a tough time being excited about David Njoku. Even if at 13, it's like, okay, I'm telling you probably not to draft him, but it's whatever if you do.
I think I'm just chasing a little bit. I've always thought Njoku, I've always thought there's a lot of potential here and upside, just the ability to make splash plays, which we don't always see at the tight end position, to get downfield. And we've said this a lot on this podcast, and I'll say it again. It's going to come up with so many players. Your view of a tight end will often be a reflection of what is your view of the other wide receivers on this team. We know who Amari Cooper is. If you are an Elijah Moore guy, you're not going to be a David Njoku guy. If you're a little bit more skeptical of Moore, which I am, that will lead you to David Njoku. And I know it's not the easiest thing to say, because there's just been a lot of stuff that's happened with Deshaun Watson that's hard to forget. And if people don't want to draft him for those reasons, it's totally your right to do so. And, you know, I struggle with that too, but I have to believe that he's a lot better this year with a full preparation run up. And last year, he was just basically helicoptered into the team late in the season. I think anybody would have probably failed under that circumstance. I could see the Browns being vastly improved, and Njoku maybe being their second most targeted player. So tight end 9 isn't a pound on the table by any means, but I'm a little bit ahead of market with Njoku, and I'm fine with that.
I think you're right, though. If you're a more Elijah Moore guy, you're not going to be a David Njoku guy, and I am an Elijah Moore guy, and that explains kind of the slight difference in our rankings. I mean, he finished last year as tight end 13, 80 targets, 628 yards, 4 touchdowns, in a much worse, if Elijah Moore is good, a much worse receiver situation. So that's kind of where my skepticism comes in. But some of that could be offset if they throw the ball more and Deshaun Watson is significantly better. I want to talk about Jake Ferguson here, because I am a tight end 16, you have a tight end 30. Neither one of us are like saying, ooh, Jake Ferguson definitely breaking out this year. But I do kind of think if you're punting tight end and you're also wanting to tell yourself a story that this guy has some ceiling, I do like Jake Ferguson a little bit as a guy that, you know, size-based player, comes from Wisconsin. Like he's you know, big tight end, baby. How many good big tight ends have there been in the NFL? I still completely do not buy that the Cowboys are just going to run the ball, right? I think they're going to be an 11 personnel team. They're going to throw the ball a lot. They have 3 good receivers if Michael Gallup gets back on track. And I think Jake Ferguson, Luke Schoonmaker, the rookie tight end they draft, he's like barely, I don't think he's going to play almost at all this season because he's had an injury riddled offseason. I think Jake Ferguson is walking in there as like an 80% snap player, and he's going to run a lot of routes.
A nod to the established run guys. I'm going to capitulate a little bit. I actually have Ferguson ranked too low. I'm going to move him into the, say, 21 to 24 range, which will still put me under the Harmon market. But I think you make good points. I'm also worried that maybe Michael Gallup just isn't a thing. But unfortunately for Ferguson shares, they have a dominant running back. They have a dominant receiver in CeeDee Lamb. And I do think Brandon Cooks, who kind of silently quit on the Texans last year, he's engaged again. If players want to be on teams where they have a chance to win something and the season isn't over before it starts. So I think Brandon Cooks is a nice value right here. I'm actually in on Dak Prescott as well. Ferguson is a good last round pick, or your tight end gets hurt in the next few weeks and you pick somebody up and you percolate towards Ferguson. As you mentioned, it's the opportunity is whatever we thought it was 2 or 3 months ago. It's probably gone up because there's injuries in this room as well. So he's probably looking at that 570-yard, 4 to 6 touchdown season. That's perfectly in play.
Mike Gesicki, you're at tight end 16. I'm at 25. I'm just concerned that Hunter Henry like runs more routes and plays more, and that this offense isn't good anyways. I mean, again, you're tight end 16. You're not saying like this is the year for Mike Gesicki, but I don't know, dude. He's been a guy I've really barely even thought about, in a similar sense of like the, oh, slot receiver, tight end that's a slot receiver. Again, it sounds a lot better when they're signing him in free agency. And so far out of camp, it's been all like Hunter Henry buzz, weirdly enough.
I mean, Hunter Henry, congratulations for the 509 yards and 2 touchdowns. You were a staple of fantasy champions.
I mean, I'm not drafting Hunter Henry either way, but I'm just saying.
He used to always be, what if Hunter Henry played a full season and now he's playing full seasons and he's giving us 41, 509, and 2? It's like, oh, so what? I guess with Gesicki, we knew that like, he just didn't fit. He was the square peg in the round hole in Miami. He didn't fit the offense, and New England has been really good. We always talk about, they draft horribly at receiver, and it's not just N'Keal Harry, but it's a million guys they've drafted who haven't worked out. Although the year they picked N'Keal Harry, they had some other guys they could have taken. We've said this a million times. It will never not bother me. But one thing the Patriots are usually really good at is scouting other people's players, especially in division. And how many times have they added Danny Woodhead or Wes Welker, somebody who has been overlooked or underutilized by one of their opposing teams? I think Belichick just loves sticking it to the other guys. Like, okay, you didn't know how to use this guy. We'll use him. Watch us. So I think there might be a little bit of internal incentive.
Especially in the division, right? Danny Woodhead had moments with the Jets.
Right.
Mike Gesicki, Dolphins. Wes Welker, Dolphins.
For sure.
So, yeah.
Definitely an in-division motif there. You get the Penn State connection, right? Gesicki and Bill O'Brien. And what do we want? We wanted just an adult in the room. I've actually kind of flipped a little bit on Mac Jones. He was so bad last year. And then he turned into Grayson Allen with all those cheap shots after he'd throw a bad interception. It's like, stop being that guy. But Mac Jones was solid as a rookie. And Bill O'Brien, say whatever you want about him as a head coach, he's a really good offensive coordinator. Some guys like Wade Phillips, some guys like Norv Turner, they're just meant to be coordinators. I wonder if Bill O'Brien's one of those guys. And the clown car that they had last year, Matt Patricia et al. The offense, the players didn't believe in it. And you're not allowed to really talk back in the New England camp. It's not allowed. They finally have an adult in the room. Gesicki's not going to be a league winner or anything, but he's somebody, if you're looking, I know it's again the cheap best ball hack. In managed leagues, you're looking for upside in your late round picks. In best ball, if you can actually find just a contributor in those late rounds, that's useful. And that's where I would love to target Gesicki. I think he's going to get 650 yards here. He's a receiver. He'll get a lot of slot reps. They don't have a great receiver room. I'm curious if you like any of the Patriot receivers where they cost right now. Mike Gesicki, I think he has an outside chance to lead this team in either catches, yards, or receiving touchdowns. I think that's all on the board for him because they need him so badly. Because look at what they're playing. Devontae Parker and Juju, those are the right answers in New England. Thornton's had a horrible summer. He's like undraftable right now. I think Mac Jones is going to be better because he's going to be coached better. And I think Mike Gesicki they brought in to use. I think he's going to have a good season. He's going to be a receiver. The fact that him and Henry played the same position doesn't matter to me because they're going to use him so differently. It's going to basically be like Gesicki's in the wide receiver room.
Fair points, honestly. You're kind of causing me to think like maybe I'm a little too low on Gesicki. Devontae Parker, by the way, probably the only interdivision, I'm going to get this guy going where you couldn't get him going, guy that didn't work out. Because, Danny Woodhead with the Jets, Wes Welker with the Dolphins. Maybe it's Gesicki with the Dolphins here as well. Taekwon Thornton. I can't believe there was Tyquan Thornton hype at one point in fantasy circles.
There was. It's dead, though. RIP. Tyquan Thornton hype 2023.
Yeah, that was fun. Okay, let's talk some candidates to make the leap here. I want to really focus in on these first two, and then we'll grab bag all of them. Breaking news on the podcast right now, though, Scott. Rashad Bateman activated from the PUP. So you're getting scared about this Mark Andrews take. Bateman's back, baby.
Wow. I'm predicting a 2-round ADP jump just from the reception perception, steam that's been generated.
Oh, yeah. Well, great. Maybe it'll work out this year. Okay. The two guys I really do want to talk about, Greg Dulcich with the Denver Broncos and Chig Okonkwo with the Tennessee Titans. Talking about Greg Dulcich here, man, because he's a guy I actually think could be, I love your point about how he's had a year around here. I'm skeptical of all of these Broncos receivers, except Marvin Mims, who I like. He's rookie. But Dulcich is the one Broncos pass catcher I think that I like clicking on. And by the way, I think he could be very much like he's in the slot all the time. They signed Chris Manhertz, who's basically, he was the sixth offensive lineman that Darnell Washington wants to be in Pittsburgh before it was cool. That guy only blocks. And they traded for Adam Trautman, who was from the Saints with Sean Payton, who's an inline tight end. Like, is Greg Dulcich just the Broncos slot receiver?
I think so. And we know that they soured on Cortland Sutton. They tried to trade him. He's not that important in their plan. He's going to have to be because they've lost Hamler and they've lost Patrick. And I know we don't agree on Judy. I like the way he finished last year. I like the fact that the team prioritized him with his new contract. Or at least the next year of his contract. It comes down to, I mentioned Watson earlier. I just can't believe Russell Wilson is as lousy at football as he was last year. And this is kind of a combination of the Watson take and the Mac Jones take, where there's adults in the room now. Sean Payton is obviously one of the best offensive designers we know. I don't think he takes this job. Look, they'll get their own guy if Russell Wilson flames out. I get it. But I don't think Payton takes this job if he wasn't somewhat confident that Wilson could be fixed. Now, granted, part of what you get with offensive vanity is that you think you can fix anybody. And so yeah. I don't think there's no quarterback in the league. I'm sure Sean Payton probably looks at Baker Mayfield and thinks like, okay, I could get him to play like he was supposed to play when he was drafted out of college and all that. I mean, it's just part of what makes these guys great is they're so supremely confident in what they do. But it's a narrow tree. They need Dulcich to run routes. I liked what I saw last year on a sinking ship. I thought he actually had fantasy relevance at the end of last season. He's a target guy. He's somebody who, again, you have to be realistic where he goes. He's not going to be like the tight end three or something, but he has a decent chance to significantly outkick where he's being drafted because you can tell yourself a story. He could be number two on this team in targets. I think that's in play for Dulcich. I want you to circle him and target him at current ADP. I think he's a two or three round value.
Again, it comes back to the disagreement on the Judy thing, but I think he could be number one on this team in targets. And that might not be good news for the Denver Broncos, but I think he'd be number one on this team in targets. And I get to tight end eight in consensus ADP. Evan Engram, he's not going to be number one on his team targets. He's like 0% chance. David Njoku, 0% chance. Pat Freiermuth, I like Pat Freiermuth. We'll talk about him in a second. 0% chance, though, he's going to be the number one target getter there. Maybe a 5% chance. Dalton Schultz, he could be the lead target leader.
I hope not.
He better not be, right? He better not be. Cole Kmet, no. Greg Dulcich, though, 121st overall, tight end 13. He could be the team's target leader. And even after that, like Dalton Kincaid, he's not going to lead his team in targets. Tyler Higbee, no. Chigo Kwankwo is the next guy off the board here, tight end 16. And let's just transition right into him. He's not going to lead his team in targets. For me, Scott, I think when DeAndre Hopkins signed with the Tennessee Titans, I think you can only make a stand on either Treylon Burks or Chigo Kwankwo, which I didn't think was true beforehand. I think you could like both guys. Where do you stand now on Chig, who I do think has playing time concerns, like how much is he going to block, all of that type of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, he's undersized at the tight end position, and he's somebody who makes splash plays. He was making a bunch of 40-yard plus catches last year in very limited playing time. I mean, he only had 46 targets, and when you watched him play, all you thought is, I want to see more of this Okonkwo guy. This guy's good. And we were excited about him. The Hopkins acquisition obviously takes some steam out of it, although I still think Tennessee's wide receiver room is substandard. It's one of these things where it's like, don't tell me what the player can't do. Tell me what he can do. Okonkwo can win down the seam. Okonkwo can run by people. Let's utilize that. Who cares if he can block? Because you know what? Your wide receiver room is not good. Even with Hopkins on his back nine, he's, you know, maybe he's not in the 18th hole. He might be on the 15th hole. I'm not drafting Hopkins. I'm nervous that she's hasn't gone bad, but the trend is going in the wrong direction, which is, you know, kind of the corollary to that. I just don't know. And this goes back to Sig Bloom and the assumption of rational coaching. The rational coaching would be Okonkwo is one of your playmakers. Get him on the field, get him 100 targets no matter what. I want that to happen. I'm not sure it's going to happen. I think it's going to be a case of a lot of people are going to draft Okonkwo and then drop him and say, I still like him. I just can't live with him getting targeted two or three times a game anymore. It's driving me crazy. I'm just nervous that the Titans aren't going to use him the way we want them to.
I'm nervous about the same thing. Like, I think they really have to open up the passing attack for him, and or you have to think Burks is not a good player. And I think there's a chance Burks is okay, but he doesn't hit his ceiling. I think Burks has to fail for Okonkwo to thrive, or Hopkins has to, you know, get hurt, which is possible, obviously. But I'm with you that, like, on a base projection, I think there are going to be two target games, which you just really can't afford, especially when there's so many guys that you can kind of hit that double with. So, all right, let's take these last three guys I have here in the making the leap section. So combine them with Greg Dulcich, Chigo Kwankwo, Cole Kmet, Juwan Johnson, and Irv Smith. Order most to least likely. Who is most likely to make the leap this year and least likely to make the leap this year among those five guys?
Dulcich for sure is the circled target here. The guy I'd probably draft the least is Juwan Johnson, because I'm just worried Derek Carr did not play well last year. And I'm worried that maybe Derek Carr just isn't good anymore. Maybe the Raiders knew what they were doing. Not that Garoppolo is going to be any kind of improvement there, but I don't know that the Saints offense can support a lot past Chris Olave. I would not. I think we probably disagree on Michael Thomas. There's a cheese gone bad guy. I like Juwan Johnson as a player. I think Juwan Johnson actually might be one of those tight ends who somehow finds a way to score six or seven touchdowns, but the volume is so low that you can't roster him anyway. I'm curious if Irv Smith, who has been on the breakout list for like 17 years in a row, I wonder, probably going back to when his dad was a football player, I wonder if he's Joe Burrow, LSU connection. Hopefully Joe Burrow's healthy. They have a narrow tree. That there's an opening probably for a good tight end there. I think Burrow would love to have a impact tight end. So I want to tell myself an Irv Smith story. He's probably a pickup for me or somebody, a wait and see guy. Dulcich is the guy I'm circling, though. I want you to get Greg Dulcich, whatever you can.
Yeah, if I had to put it in order, I think it would be Dulcich, Okwankwo, most likely, and Dulcich for sure. Cole Kmet, I don't see a leap there. Juwan Johnson, I would have seen a leap had they not also signed Foster Moreau. Like, that tight end room is sneaky crowded. Yep. With the concerns, and dude, we're on the same page about Michael Thomas. Like, I loved Michael Thomas at his peak, but you can draft him because where he's going to go, it doesn't matter. But I need to see it to believe it. And I don't think he looked that good last year as a separator, only a contested catch guy. And Irv Smith, there's a reason the Vikings were like, you know what? We're in the middle of the season. We need to trade for a tight end and feed this tight end a ton of volume because our current tight end can't make plays and can't beat man coverage. And that was, I think, the deal with Irv Smith there. So, all right, Scott, let's end this show by picking our guy at the tight end position. I will let you go first.
Yeah, I already talked about him a fair amount. It's Dallas Goedert for me because those efficiency metrics, again, the yards per target and the quarterback rating when he's targeted are so high, still a narrow tree. He just needs to get a little bit more friendly with Jalen Hurts near the goal line, but I think that's perfectly in play. So I'm also proactively going to seek out Mark Andrews. If I can just get him, just, you know, if he slides just a little bit, a half round, which he may, or in a salary cap draft, if he's just a little bit under market, I might go with him. And if you're going cheaper, Dulcich was a guy we circled, but you only have one, my guy, Dallas Goedert's my guy.
I thought about Greg Dulcich here, but if I have to go by how I draft, I think my guy this year is Pat Freiermuth, who I think is going to split out a lot in that offense. You know how I feel about Matt Canada's offense, but I have been talking myself into an evolution here for the Steelers offense. I think Kenny Pickett can take a step in year two. I think these receivers, while I like all of them, Deontay Johnson, George Pickens, and even Allen Robinson this year, a little bit.
I got to duck that in. Do not draft Allen Robinson, anyone.
When he has six touchdowns this year, Scott. No, but seriously,
big statement on the Steelers. That would take 3 years. let me back that up. I'll give you a chance to talk for Freiermuth. I share your optimism that I think Pickett has a chance. I think Pickett played a lot better at the end of last year. I think he has a chance to be pretty good.
Yeah, and Pat Freiermuth was really good last year. Like, Pat Freiermuth was a really nice player. He finished the year with 98 targets, 732 yards, just two touchdowns because nobody on the Steelers scored touchdowns last year, right? I mean, freaking Deontay Johnson scored zero, you know? So they're going to their touchdown rate is bound to progress this year. Kenny Pickett, I think, can take a step. He can play off script. I think this offense overall can take a step. And Pat Freiermuth goes at the 89th overall pick in consensus ADP. Actually, he goes the highest on Yahoo, and I wonder why that is, right? But sometimes you can get him at like pick 100, you know, again, in the 80s. And I don't think his outlook, like, I guess there's probably a higher ceiling for a Kyle Pitts, for a Darren Waller, but I think their outlooks are pretty similar. Like, I think his outlook is the same. It's not the same because the offensive difference, but like, the role won't be that different from Dallas Goedert. So I think he's kind of like an arbitrage play on Dallas Goedert. And even if he doesn't have the same ceiling theoretically as those two guys, I think his safe projection is what keeps drawing me to him. Because again, to bring it back to the conversation we had at the top, I have so far not been willing in the like 40s and the 50s and even sometimes in the 60s been willing to prioritize tight end because I'm trying to figure out my receiver core, my running backs, and maybe think about what I'm doing at quarterback. So every time we get to the 80s and 90s, that's where I've been taking Pat Freiermuth. So he's my guy this year.
Yeah, I like it. Two thumbs up on Freiermuth for the Pickett reasons. There's going to be some positive touchdown regression here. And, you know, as much as it's fun to talk about Deontay Johnson, you know, 147 targets, no touchdowns. He actually had two-point conversions.
Yeah.
Which is a play. I'm pretty sure a two-point conversion is a play that ends in the end zone. And you spike the ball. You celebrate with your teammates. So what they need to do when they get to the red zone or at the goal line is they need to tell Deontay Johnson, we're running our two-point play, man. Get open. This is a two-pointer. Because obviously the 6 points have him psyched out. You need to just let him know that he's going for the two-pointer. But I'm with you on Freiermuth. He's going to be take his two seasons and, you know, basically mix the touchdowns in the middle somewhere. He'll be 5 to 7 is a reasonable range of outcomes, and maybe he can pop up to 8 or 9. He's a good player, and he's capable of making splash plays, making guys miss, running some wide receivery routes. I think he's an excellent target, and we're going to give a two-headed cosign to Freiermuth.
Yeah, Deontay Johnson has to be like the weirdest good player to ever play in the NFL. He has to be.
You know what's funny is for all the sunshine that we give to the Steelers for the receivers they draft. It's like, oh my God, they get these great receivers and they never go in the first round. And yet, but they're all weird guys. Antonio Brown, weird. I mean, Hall of Fame weird guy. And Juju was kind of weird. And Deontay Johnson's weird. Martavis Bryant was weird. And, you know,
George Pickens, a little weird.
Don't be weird, Pickens. Be normal.
I hate to tell you, he's weird.
He's weird. Well, maybe he's, receiver. I mean, we know receiver is the diva position. You need so much confidence and nerve to go over the middle and get hammered and stuff. It's they have to be wired the way they are. You can't be a shrinking violet and be a dominant wide receiver at any level of football, let alone professional football. So I get it. It's just part of what you need to be successful. You need to tell yourself that you're better than everybody else. But yeah, the Steelers, even with a position that's weird, the Steelers kind of, they sauce up the weird.
Hey, well, we've told you today to not be a shrinking violet when you approach a tight end position this year. You know, take your shot on your guys later, take some guys early, get after it, man. Tight ends, try to dominate it this year. Scott, what do you got coming up for people to check out now that we're officially in draft season?
Yeah, what's more exciting than promoting my boring guy piece, which is going to come out Friday, the reliable vets that can get you through. And Andy Dalton and I talked about, who do you take at the number one spot? We had three different answers for that. That went up Wednesday, which is when we're taping this show. So go check that out. And of course, we're updating our rankings every day. I'm on this podcast. I'm doing a bunch of guest podcasting. So there's a lot to say. There's a lot to write about. Really, we're in draft season now, Matt. I mean, we're in the second week of August. It's time to go get some teams assembled. So it's an exciting time for Yahoo Fantasy.
I actually have on the podcast schedule, Scott, you're talking about sleepers when we get to conviction week here in a couple weeks. I also put / all boring team because sometimes those boring guys can be sleepers. So get ready to hear about the boring team on the podcast here, people, because I am ready to hear about it. But for now, that's going to do it for this show. Tomorrow, we conclude the positional preview week here on the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show by getting weird. Just like the Steelers receivers, we're going to get a little weird.
Weirder.
We are going to get like full George Pickens watching Curtis himself weird. Get drafted with weird. We're going to talk defenses. We're going to talk kickers with Andy Behrens. We might talk about a little bit more than that, but it'll be fun. I promise. You don't want to miss that. We're also, like I said, going to dive into our staff's latest mock draft and hit on some other major draft day debates. Until then, we're out.